Okay, well, let's call the meeting to order. It is 4:05 p.m. on Thursday, February 27th at the main office conference room. Okay, you guys want to take a look at the agenda and make any comments or motions to modify or approve?
The plastic bag on initiative on the old business, just so we can have updates at every meeting, since the phase out is supposed to be this whole year, and January 1st is supposed to be the ban is supposed to take place on January 1st. So just so we have monthly updates on what's being done to phase out. What's the phase out look like? What's the process?
Okay. Is Sabrina here?
Yes, I heard
okay.
that. Thank
okay.
You very well.
Okay. Okay. We'll do that.
Can we also add, just so we get status updates on developing an educational program for board members that we can use for the future?
Wasn't there a class that was being offered by ULG or GCC or somebody on...
Doesn't sound
board
like it anymore, according to our meeting.
Oh, okay.
But for all boards?
Yeah, the agency.
Not at GCC,
supposed
but I think Kristen's
have
ripping
a,
with the
training and orientation for
ages,
board members,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. For new board members to get associated on the responsibilities from them.
Kristen, do you know anything about that?
No. This is you guys are not talking about something that's through the AG's office. Although the AG is, they're working on a training. They are working on a training, but separate from that.
Okay.
The training that used to be provided by GCC, I don't know. I don't know anything about like who's doing it now. But they are working on a different type of, just kind of a overview for board members. They're still working on it.
Okay.
If you want to put something, you know, like you say, some kind of running thing on the agenda until that's developed so we can update them.
Right, and it's just in broad terms, it's like procurement and ethics, but also it's applicable to the specific roles of each board, and like codes of conduct on how meetings are conducted and stuff like that. Just an orientation.
Okay, so we'll see what the AG is going to be doing with that.
The training they're working on is kind of a just sort of a overall like a
generic board.
Yeah,
training.
Just open government, all that kind of stuff.
Does the Civil Service Commission have we looked into them? I mean, because they've conducted cabinet training, so I don't know if they have something built for the board.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Or maybe we
can
have
check with Civil Service. Yeah.
Maybe we could have a briefing one day just on the.
Ethics.
On the specific things peculiar to this board, because this is a pretty powerful board. There's a lot more authority policy-wise than most others.
Right.
Maybe, Kristen, could you give us a,
in
the future?
I can if you kind of give me some kind of a scope of what you want me to cover.
Okay. Does that sound kind of like what might help out a little bit, kind of thing?
Yeah, definitely. Because I think when I was appointed or whatever, just going through the laws of what's relative and what's expected of board members, and it says like within 30 days you're supposed to have taken this course, otherwise you'll be dismissed. And so I just want to make sure
that doesn't exist. And then I think we're required to take an ethics class as well,
right,
aren't we?
I
don't think that's really been enforced in the past. I think I've taken it 2 or 3 times, but I don't know that.
Where did you take it through? Was that through GCC?
UOG.
Yeah.
I think Dr. Guthertz gave the last one I took. And then I think Doris Brooks gave another one that I took.
There was just one recently.
Oh, there was?
Yeah. It was, I think it was GCC, it was all for the DPW and the appeals board.
Oh.
It was given by Jerry
Harris. Can we just follow that up too?
Just, yeah. I think it was just 2 months ago.
Oh, okay. Okay. So that's something we'll probably look, we'll have to look into.
And other stuff covering the boards.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks, Roland. Okay. So with those issues in mind, and Arlene is going to put those on the future agendas. Is there any motion on the current agenda for today?
Oh, there is also the, I don't know, maybe it's in the administrator's report, just the planner symposium. Yeah, it might just be.
Is Conchita here?
You wanted an update?
Oh, no, just a, I guess a...
The one that we
the
held,
that was
held.
Was held last week, yeah.
And it might just be in his report.
Actually, mine's going to be... doing something a little different today.
Okay.
Yes. So, but we can address it later on and new business also. So.
Okay.
Okay.
I approved the minutes, though.
Okay.
I make a motion to approve the minute.
Okay. And that moves to...
Or not the minutes, the agenda.
The agenda. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Seconded by Nick. Okay. And, by the way, we do have quorum of... Steve Hollister, Nito Blas, Maneka is here, Nick Pate, Steve Carbolito. So we have six board members present, so we do have quorum. Okay, so all in favor of approving the minutes?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, the minute, there are the agendas. Agendas approved. Okay, I want to take a look at the January 16th minutes for any... comments or changes or approval?
It was already seen by the legislature and the, I mean by the senator, and then I was just waiting for
the appointment.
So any questions or changes regarding the minutes of the January 16th meeting?
Just I don't think the administrator's report is long enough.
That's why I'm doing it different this month.
It won't be as long today.
Huh? Yeah. Wow, really?
No, you're usually one
that happens. Steve?
Sorry, I'm late.
So Steve Carrera has joined us.
Hi, Steve.
So now we have seven members present.
I move to approve the minutes from last meeting.
Okay, Maneka moves to approve the minutes. There a second?
Second.
Okay, seconded by Nick Pape. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay.
Aye.
Okay, the minutes are approved.
Always helpful. Hang on, Steve.
I know you're a fast reader, Steve.
Yes. And mind reader.
And mind reader, thank you.
Okay, let's go on to the administrator's report. First, we should introduce... Okay. Nito Blas, our new board member, welcome to the board.
Thanks.
And look forward to your participating with us and helping the agency out. So welcome.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
That's my father.
Cool.
Is this
my turn?
Your turn.
All right, so because I've heard it, I've done a lot of talking the last 2 weeks. My team, Steve and Kwame P.A., is going to be doing the talking today. I just got to point out a few things. Michelle, if you could introduce the new employee, Chie.
Yes, so I'd like to introduce Chie Takase. She is an Environmental Health Specialist 1. She was a lateral transfer from the Division of Environmental Health at Public Health.
Yes.
Welcome.
And she's in
the
program.
Oh, she's with the Green Parcels Desmobile program.
Yes, and this is one of the three that they got a lot of flack that we're stealing too many public health EHSs. So, so we're trying to slow down, but I know on record there's more people that want to come over, but we're not asking them because stay
we
away.
Will.
I'm getting in trouble for taking all of them, but yes, welcome. Yes, okay. We have a couple contractors in the audience. Travis, I think you've met before. He's with Innovate. He's working on our Walters. If there's questions that you want, he's here, you know, building our Walters a server. Not me. Okay. Stop it. And then we also have Cadmus here, Karen and Duran, who I'd like Brian and them to explain what they're doing here as part of my administrative report. And just so you guys know, a lot of discussion both from the air, solid waste, haz waste, and our recycling will be presented during our new business. So, again, after that, and as soon as I'm done, I just wanted to let you know we're on track to obtain the digital transfer station property that DPW currently owns. We are trying to get that for our home. And it is contaminated property, and US EPA said they would assist us in what they did an assessment. They would assist on cleanup or removal action if we obtain the property. Madam Governor knows about this, and she's excited to sign the property over if she can. We need to do some review of details to make sure it's not part of the consent decree, make sure DPW has actually the deed to it, and it's not a GovGuam deed. If it's DPW, then Madam Governor can just sign it off administratively to Guam EPA. If it's under the GovGuam inventory, then we have to go through the legislature. But that looks like it's going to be our property in the very near future. And with that, I'm going to turn it to Brian to introduce and the purpose. Yes.
So last month, you guys approved the Safe Drinking Water Regulation statute to go to the legislature, and we can update you on that later. But the next step, besides that, that's just one step toward getting approval for Guam to actually administer its own drinking water regulations. The other big step is obtaining primacy approval from US EPA. And so we have our contractors here from a company called Cadmus. They've been US EPA contractors for many decades. They're kind of very well known. They've written a lot of the US EPA's guidance manuals for drinking water. I don't know if you guys have worked on the regulations or not. but they've worked with a lot of states in helping them get their primacy application packages put together. So we just finished four brutal days of sitting down with these guys, going through regulatory crosswalks, and answering all these special questions of how Guam EPA will actually implement the regulations that you guys have approved to get that done, so that US EPA can review all that and say, okay, yes, they're going to do this appropriately. We will now give Guam permission to use these regulations. So if you guys wouldn't mind maybe just introducing yourselves and giving a little bit of background on what we did this week.
Yes. Sure. Yeah, my name is Drew Cody. I'm with the Cadmus Group. I'm based in Helena, Montana, and I'm the work assignment manager for this project that we're doing with Guam. And first of all, thanks to Guam EPA for having us at this meeting and all your hospitality and hard work this week. It's been a really productive week, so we're excited to see this project moving forward. This contract that Brian spoke about is entails the primacy packages for four of EPA's Safe Drinking Water Act rules, and then also includes some work to develop standard operating procedures so that the drinking water program's processes for implementing their rules will be recorded and written down so that new staff are hired, or just as a reference, that will always be on record as well. So in terms of timeline, it's great that you guys are close to enacting these regulations into law, and once that happens, your primacy package can be reviewed by EPA Region 9, and once their review is complete, they'll grant you that authority to formally implement the rules, and in addition to that, you'll have these written procedures from us as well on the record.
What are the components of a primacy package? What does that mean?
It's a lot of paperwork. It's basically a letter from your attorney general stating that they certify that the drinking water program has the authority to enforce the regulations that are on record. It includes a copy of your drinking water regulations, and then it basically goes through the federal regulations line by line in what we call a crosswalk, and demonstrates that your regulations are at least as stringent as the federal regulations.
Yeah. And again, what she was indicating that their contract's kind of up this year, tentatively, and it was very, very good that Senator Perez has decided to, and well, first off, you guys approving the statutes and regs so that it could go to the floor in the legislature, because we need those promulgated here before they can enact on it. But they're moving forward as it is, so that when it is, it's very, the package is submitted to US EPA already completed. So it's a good deal that having them there. I kind of jump in all the time, so.
Well, I'm Karen Sklenar, and first off, I'd like to say I need to go home and go on a diet, because your food is fantastic here, and everyone's been so gracious and hospitable. Thank you. So my background, I work from my home outside of Philadelphia. I've got a thing with the Eagles and the Cowboys. Before I worked with Cadmus, I worked for New York State's drinking water program.
Best water in the world.
So they say.
They don't just say it. It is.
You drink it? You and drink I did prepare water. These primacy packages actually for New York State, some of them did. And I trained around the country on these regulations. We're quite familiar with the requirements of them. So walking through them pretty carefully was painful, but I think hopefully educational and productive.
I gotta say, she's got so much experience; it's unbelievable. She was there when a lot of this stuff happened, so getting training from her was fantastic, because she was able to tell us, oh, here's the story behind this, and this is why it has these. This is why it looks like the tax code that it is right now is so complex. She was able to sort that out for us, like, oh, now I get it. The things that I never knew.
I joke with them that it's because I'm so old. I've been doing this long enough. I remember when they adopted each of these regulations at the federal level. So thank you again for having us.
And a part of the training, is someone from GWA here?
No, because this is for us. This is for us.
Yeah, this is for our regulations to for you as people to say, yes, Guam EPA, you are in charge of these regulations and these statutes. It is yours. You mess up, then we may take it back. But that's what this is.
But it would be, the regulations would be for GWA to...
For anybody who...
Every public water system.
Yeah,
GWA, the Navy, the Swamps, the system
we have. Yes, yes.
So if we invite GWA, we'd have to invite every single other one. It just wasn't appropriate.
And again, it's just to reinforce that our statutes and regs are good enough and meet US EPA's requirements. And then we just, you know, that's what we have to keep to and enforce. And any modification, right, we have to go through this process again.
Is the process of getting the primacy approved, is that kind of based on what you guys are laying out and kind of the cross-check, is it kind of a foregone conclusion that they'll approve it, or is there a lot of discretion?
Well, we're trying to prevent there being too much to and fro.
Yeah.
So we're really trying to be very thorough and ensure that we've captured and that that's really what we were working hard on. It's just making sure you have to answer to, as
right.
Brian said, to each of these things and just providing a enough of an explanation, and I feel pretty confident that you have you have the authority,
mm-hmm.
and it's about just describing it.
So the good thing is that the contract originates from the region, or maybe even from the entire US EPA, and so they were kind of like a subcontractor, or they're a subcontractor for us, because we leave the money there. And then it's the contract through USDP that they're assisting us for the primacy part.
Okay.
So we hope that the USDP's picked the perfect contract. I think they did. But, again, that's where it's not guaranteed, but, you know, it's someone that USDP has said, okay, we know this company can do this, and so that's why it's good for us.
And if I could add that because of that arrangement, we're working closely with US EPA region 9.
Mm-hmm.
We were just on a phone call this morning with them. So unless they're not telling us everything,
right.
You know, we should be heading in the right direction.
Okay.
So then we'll be able to get additional grant money to do all the things required under...
I don't know about that, but we'll have primacy, and based on primacy, maybe we can present to the board more... more appropriate fees and fines based on and the work that we can do.
As far as grant money from USDA,
I don't think it has any to do with grant money.
Oh,
no.
Okay.
It's just us maintaining our primacy or giving us additional parameters to be, that will be Guam EPA's oversight. Correct. Yes.
Okay.
Unless I'm saying it wrong. Are we good? Okay, and then that's my administrative report. See how quick that was?
I don't mind. They would like to go on a tour of Guam.
Yes, I know.
Sure.
I know.
I'm happy to. I can leave a bunch of my cards.
We have selfishly
left.
Selfishly kept them in the office. All
Yes.
I'll just leave a pile of them.
Thank you.
We're from
Philly. We're
Westchester.
Oh, I live in Chatham.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. Do you know Peter? You know Peter? George Elton? Angela Scully?
Thank you.
Go Eagles.
I've been in Westchester for a long time.
Well, then I don't know it. She doesn't know anyone.
No, so it's a good thing that they were here. It's a good thing that they worked with our safe drinking water because, again, once our statutes and regs are promulgated locally, it gets submitted to US EPA for primacy to ensure that we've met everything. And, again, because they're really a US EPA contractor that we're utilizing, it should be smooth. Yeah, you know how that goes.
And the timing, though, is it expected to take a long...
So they've had them under contract for a couple of years. Excuse me. And for whatever reason, rhyme or reason, and no excuses for why it's taking Guam EPA so long, but we finally got it down, finally got it to the senator, and based on after your guys' approval. And so we've been on contract, I think, since the last 4 or 5 years, and it was just this year that we finally got the regs down and that they can actually start reviewing. So, again, this being supposed to be the last year, we are very fortunate we actually got it done in time, and it works within the time of the contract.
You're talking about the primacy of the local region?
Yeah, yeah. Like once you know we get the it passes in the legislature, then we submit the package. Is that just going to be a quick process?
I can't answer. I don't know. I've never been part of the primacy approval in that.
If the legislature passes the law in the next couple of months, I think these guys will be ready to submit or have it ready for us to submit. Because that's what we have to wait for that, so we can get the attorney general's letter. Mm-hmm. We should be able to submit. In May or June, depending on how quickly they can get it.
Yeah, but do you know how long US EPA takes to review?
I don't. So they have a backlog. From what I understand is once they get the application package, they will kind of grant a temporary kind of interim, okay, you're approved, and they'll let you go, but it could be years as they get before they give final approval. Yeah. But in that interim time, they kind of give you that ability to go ahead and enforce. Okay. But the official primacy approval may take a while.
Yeah.
But if they do a good job with the package, I think we've got a great chance with these guys, then it might actually go pretty quick this year. But there's no guarantees.
But it doesn't, that interim approval doesn't inhibit your ability to enforce and collect fines and all of that. It's effective.
Because our own laws are still what's in effect there. So we collected a fine recently, which I'll update you guys on the old drinking water rules. And we can do that without primacy. Mm-hmm. Primacy is just... Mm-hmm. To give us that first line authority to enforce the
regulation.
Okay.
Right. Okay. It's like the SBCC regs that we've done with the hazardous waste team. US EPA doesn't give primacy out for that specific, but we are allowed as a local entity or as a state territory to go ahead and provide and promulgate your own regs. And it's just you would like to stay within what they're doing so that it's not totally... offshoot, but they can also, if we were to do an NOV, they could come in and do the same NOV on their own if they wanted to.
Right. Okay. Did you want to have your solid waste folks?
We could do it now, or we were going to do it per se. Yes, sir.
Can we, since
we've
got University of Columbia,
yes, sure.
For the USCs, we'd like to request that.
Okay.
You can proceed with that?
See, sure. It's not me now. Mm-hmm. it's my team now. Yeah, they can't complain about me anymore. It's all of us.
Let me start off with GWA. What we had was received a memo from GWA that they're going to be complying with an NOV that we issued.
Okay.
And we also received a check in the amount of $12,692 for that. Fines that we issued to GWA. So, according to the memo, they're requesting 45 days for them to comply with whatever violation that we issued. So, I think we'll unclose to.
Right. So, I'm sorry, but we just jumped to new business real quick on the NOVs there, yes.
So, what happened this week is that University of Guam, it's about 2 years since we. Right. Issued an NOV. So this week we met with representative from the University of Guam and informed them of the fines that was imposed 2 years ago. And that amount is about $12,480. So what we did was we talked to them and asked them if they can come down and probably suggest something or where are we with the fine itself.
What was the violation?
It's USC's underground storage tanks also. So it's been 2 years, and there have been changes with the people at the university. So that's the reason why we went up there and talked to them, really, to find out where are we with this fine. So I think somebody from the University of Guam would like to talk to you guys regarding the fine.
Sorry. Hi, thank you, board members, for the opportunity to have a discussion. By way of background, I'm Dave Okada. I'm really the interim chief of staff for the University of Guam, but I wear two other hats. The other hat is the interim facilities management and services, of which this area of what he's talking about is the hat I'm wearing. Okay, and so he's right. Back in 2018, when the former chief was in place, there was discussions about in-kind service in lieu of the $12,480 fine that was implemented for the university to pay. So it was brought to my attention recently that this was still something hanging out there. So we had a meeting together with the EPA team, and that's why we're here today. And so the proposal is something that I understand the EPA also needs in terms of support of training to the community. And so the university is prepared to provide a Core 1 basic pesticide training. The total value of this Core 1 package is actually $13,276 if it was requested on an MOU.
Okay.
But the university is willing to waive the difference of $796 to cover for that violation fine in lieu of.
Okay, I'm going to have to stop this. I'm sorry. So this should be something we discuss, and if there's a difference in negotiation between us, then it comes to the board. You can explain it to the board, because this is the board meeting. But to make a final decision on this, it would be you guys talking to me and Michelle, and then if we couldn't come to a resolution, then it would be discussed to the board.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's up to the board. You're more than to go ahead and give the proposal. I'm okay with it.
So this is an information?
Yes.
Right.
Yes. That's
EPA,
okay. Yes.
We want EPA to consider.
Thank you, sir.
A opt-in proposal for in-kind in lieu of the 12480, which we are prepared to do. And if it's acceptable, we are prepared to implement.
Okay.
Subject to your questions,
that's
all I have.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, the reason why we invited them is this was part of the agenda.
But I just know the proposal. Yes, the proposal is, like I said, it's better as an informational for the board, because it officially won't be presented to the board unless we can't come to an agreement. Yes.
And for the record, this is an information brief to the board, subject to our discussion.
Yes.
So.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir.
And that concludes my presentation.
Yes.
I
thank you, sir. No, and there's no hard feelings. It's good to present it here.
The pesticide training would be given to who and what?
So again, this is part of our discussion.
So you would do that.
So in lieu of receiving funds, we allow a SEP, which is Supplemental Environmental Program, and there's conditions in a SEP that needs to be met. It's not the benefit of Guam EPA. It's the benefit of the community, and it also tries to tie in with what the NOV is. So if it's drinking water, or it's pesticide, or hazardous, you try to work it that it addresses that. Again, there are some conditions in the SEP that need to be met, and again, for the information, thank you. But that's just something that we would have to look at, and we've approved steps before that meet the conditions, and of course it's got to go through legal counsel review, and that's the only reason I stopped it, just because I'm sure legal counsel at that point was going, what's going on here, because that's kind of what I was doing, and so we just wanted to make sure that we follow our protocol, and I didn't mean to embarrass or shortcut it or stop anybody, but protocol is that we get it, and then if we can't come to an agreement, then it'll be presented. But it's good that you guys heard it. You guys almost just heard like a quick process of how it's done. So welcome to the SIP and NOB world right there.
So, Walter, just one question with the money we gain from fines.
Uh-huh.
That's up to you to figure out where the money's
going to
go,
usually
right?
The notice of violations are tied into a specific account for that program itself.
Okay.
And so the money goes into there. We use conditions to decide what the fine is, and and also conditions to determine if a SEP is feasible or not.
I guess the decision would be pesticide training, or can I use this money for something higher?
Specific, but and again, it just depends on how many times a repeat violator is, or if they're not, then. There's a couple of factors that you take into account. Yes.
And they're tied into the grant conditions as well.
Yeah.
So the grant says that the money is earned in this program, the money should be spent in that program.
Yeah.
So that's why you don't have free mobility of funds.
Okay, that's...
Yes. But it's not just like Guam EPA doesn't just have one account. We have special accounts pending our, our publication of regulations and statutes of regulations for a specific program. So, yes. Okay. But I do like that proposal, just as an informational proposal.
Thank you.
Yes. And so, I think that...
That concludes
the new business. The new business. Yes. Well, we haven't done the old one. But,
okay,
yeah.
Sure, but great.
Yeah. Now, yeah, do, okay, I suppose, so can, do you want to just so finish
just
new
that.
Business? It's up to you, sir. This is your meeting.
Okay. You guys want to go through the old business, the NOVs and such, and get some of these updates, and then have the presentation from the solid waste folks?
Yeah,
because that's part of the administrative report,
right,
isn't
yes,
it?
Yes.
So we could do it now as part of your...
Okay. Yeah. So I asked Roland to do
okay
a presentation.
Well, it's okay. Not really a presentation, it's been more of an announcement.
Yeah.
So January 11, 2014, the amnesty for the standby generator permits was lifted. And since then, we've been doing enforcement, but we have not issued any penalties or remedies. And so all we've done is try to get people into compliance. As long as they got their permit and then paid their annual fees, we didn't add any type of penalties. There's actually a late penalty for not applying, I mean, for not paying your annual emission fee, and there's a late penalty for not renewing your permit on time, and it's basically a monthly penalty. And also with that, there's also the fines. There's civil and criminal penalties, and for all the fines, they're up to $10,000 a day per violation. And so in conjunction with discussions with the administrator, he's decided that we're going to now implement these fines beginning April 1st, 2020. So all the fines listed under 10 GCA Chapter 49, Section 49116, and 22 GAR, Section 1425 will now be imposed on all individuals and businesses that either do not pay their annual emission fees, do not renew their permits, or do not get permits for the emission sources that are significant. Which is basically anyone that produces two tons of year-end criteria.
So, yeah, and it sounds like we're coming down hard. It's been in the works, and we've announced it that these are a requirement in PSAs and outreach that Nick and Roland worked on. And it's been 6 years, and we've held off, and it's just time. It's like there's no more excuses. They got a very healthy inventory of companies that already have submitted or and whether they needed standby generator or any other permits, then they've looked it over. But it's time to start doing our enforcement on it. We've waited 6 years.
And so as part of that, that's why Travis is here. So we're trying to actually, we're pretty much done. There's just some glitches that we need to work out by the system, but we've been using it. And so the online permitting system, there's no excuse. I mean, literally, you use punch your numbers and it automatically calculates everything for you. And we're getting to the point where they're going to just punch in their hours on their permit, and it'll tell them how much they owe for the annual mission fees. And an announcement will go out, and, you know, I think it's, I don't know how many days we decided, 60 days prior to.
Right.
And they'll generate an email to whoever's on the application packet that says you need to pay your annual mission fees, punch in your number of hours you use or generated this year, and then it'll tell you how much you have to pay. So there's really no excuse.
Right. Yeah. And so that's a decision that we came up with. I wanted Roland to present it to you guys. If you think it's, as our policy board, do you think we should think about it? I'm interested to hear your comments on it. But again, this is something that was lifted 6 years ago.
Yeah, January 11, 2014.
And I've held off Roland for the last 2 years. So I still don't think we've given enough opportunity. I don't feel that way anymore. If you guys feel that way as a policy board, you guys can dictate a way that we should proceed, and then I will have that discussion with you guys. But that's my justification, or me and Michelle's justification. It's been 6 years in the works, and we've pushed out every year, and I don't know what else we could do to be fair. In fact, I think we've been very, very fair.
And is the main concern that there is sufficient awareness on the part of the people who are impacted by these regulations? And
I mean, that could be a concern. I think that's an excuse at this point, because we've done ample public announcements.
Public outreach.
Yes.
Yeah, so
we've done ample.
When the best way to boost awareness is to actually implement.
Right.
Else just
we've literally held public hearings, announcements. We've announced it 2-3 times a year, every year.
Right.
And we've announced it. I've gone to GHRA. I've gone to the Contractors Association, you know.
I wanted to give you guys the opportunity to this.
And
this is something we want to do.
The company selling the generators, telling these people when you buy a generator, you need to tell them that you need to get a permit if it's a certain size generator.
Yeah,
so
when you say 2 tons a year, what size are we talking about?
Depends on the tier of the generator. So if it's a tier 3, it's like 150 kilowatts and above. If it's a tier 2 generator, it's more like 87 kilowatts and above. So basically, because of the use of ULSD on Guam, it's more mainly knots and CO now we're looking at for their output.
And again, I just wanted to...
What are some vendors that use that?
I'm sorry?
What are some of the vendors that already are using? I mean, a lot
every
of...
Every single hotel.
Hotel, right, okay.
Right? Like, big, large businesses, any distributors, pay all paylesses.
Yeah.
Most of the gas stations. I'm almost every single gas station. A lot of the GDOW pump stations.
Right.
And they don't have... They don't have permits right
no,
now.
No,
yeah, they do.
Okay.
See, they do.
It's the ones that we need to go out now
oh.
and enforce. So we've been actively, my staff has been actively, literally going down to Mana. We've been found some hotels that haven't had permits and they've been in operation for 20 years.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we literally go building the building. We started in Tumon, and then we're going to branch out after that. We're almost done with Tumon.
Other thresholds, though, it primarily applies to businesses.
There's no exemptions. So, I don't know, it's public information. So there's only one individual that has an actual generator from his home because it's large enough to you know meet the criteria for as a significant source. But most generators... are below that. So,
okay. That's
yeah, like a home generator, generally, no. If you have a really big house and you have an older
kind of like a mansion, not just a big house.
Well, we all have mansions.
I mean, 87 kilowatts is a lot. I mean, you can power like 3-4 you know, houses. It takes about 10 to 20, depending on what you have in your house, kilowatts for an average home.
But then again, with everything online, you like Roland said, you plug in the numbers and it'll tell you if you need a permit or not.
Right.
It's that easy.
So Walters is good to go then, right? Because I know there were some issues with it for a while there, and it was stopped and started and stopped and started.
No, we literally put an advertisement out, was it November, that told them to apply already online. People have been applying. If there's any problems with them applying, they just call us, and we can manually do it for them.
I mean, over the last 6 years, there's been issues.
Yeah. Yes.
Because I think within the last year.
I think we're in the final stretch. Because it's just glitches. Everything else, it works. So.
Yes, it works well.
Okay.
And I think by doing this, you are then able to generate an inventory of all those sources.
Exactly. So one of the requirements for our work plan is we need to begin putting out an emissions inventory for the island of Guam as part of our grant. And so this will allow us to track all significant sources. Because we already track GPA, Navy, and Air Force. You know, Anderson, those are the three big ones. And then we need to track every other significant source.
That's two, right?
It's
cumulative.
Yeah. So every year we add it up, the total, and then we put an inventory out for the island of Guam. So every state is a requirement of their state implementation plan that they put an emission inventory out every year.
Right.
Is there a fee to apply for the permit?
Yes. The initial fee is $150, and then the annual payment is $100 or $6.
But if they're not required, if it tells them they don't need it,
then they don't require it.
Yeah. But then there's no fee then.
Yeah, well, if they apply online, there's always a fee, because then we have to do the actual... Yeah. If they do the calculations themselves and don't use our system and say, okay, I don't need a permit, then we go there and then we find out that, okay, you're wrong, you need a permit, then we can find them, actually. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people are coming in, they apply, they pay the fee, they get the letter, and they post the letter up on their business. We walk in, they're like, we already applied, we don't need a permit, you know. It's a de minimis letter from the agency.
Okay.
Because my staff is going to stand there and do calculations for them manually, tell them whether they need a permit or not. They might as well pay the staff to do it. It's not something simple. So I apply online, and if you don't need one, then they'll tell you. And then if you want to make sure yourself or do your own calculations, that's up to you.
Do the vendors, when they're selling these things, like run
they're required by
them?
Law to advise?
Yeah.
Yeah, we have a letter that's going to go out again to them also.
Because there's not a lot of vendors who sell generators this large.
There's probably about 6 to 8 that I know of. And there's a bunch of private people that sell generators too.
Yeah.
But you need a business license.
Are these backup generators, or do a lot of these businesses?
They're all backup
generators.
Okay. Yeah. Unless you're prime power, and if you're prime power, then you need to get a different kind of permit. You need to get a Title V. It's called a Part 69, alternate Title V permit for the island, other than a standby generator. And then anything above, well, depending on the class, either 100 or 250, you got to get a U.S. EPA permit. That's tons per year.
So I'm going to leave it to you guys. If you think our decision is wrong, then please let me know, and we'll have a further discussion.
Do we need to vote on it?
That's up to you guys.
No, the moratorium was actually lifted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just been at the administrative discretion that we waived.
And I just wanted to give you guys
and fines.
Ample
it's
opportunity.
The law's
been in effect since 2005.
Mm-hmm.
It's up to you guys.
Yeah, sounds like a good plan to enact it.
Thank you, sir.
Six years later.
Thank you,
yeah,
sir.
6 years later.
Yes.
But I already wrote the advertisement.
I'm curious to see. I mean, how many people, you know, have to.
Well, they're not arguing, really, so we're good.
If you hit the hotels, the smaller hotels, I guess they still have it.
Right. Yeah. Okay. And the recycling revolving fund discussion, I know you guys all heard about us and the mayors. So Sabrina's going to give us yes.
Oh, yes. Sabrina.
Yes. It's a laugh
just
one, too.
Yes. A laugh?
Yeah, for me.
It is a laugh. Otherwise, just give an update of where we were from last month. It's still status quo. However, we did have a very productive meeting with the mayor's council and all the vendors. In late January, and then just recently, last week, we had another meeting with Adaloop and the mayor's council, and according to Walter, the meeting was so successful that now we have Adaloop supporting us and understands why we're not moving forward, and giving them the $1.3 million that they have requested, because the mayor's council still has not satisfied, I mean, we still have not reconciled all the invoices, and to date, they still have not provided documents for $684,000 of that $1.3 that they are very well aware of since December 10th. And so, you know, I have emailed them, I've talked to them, and told them we keep moving forward. Angel kind of skirts the issue and tries to put all the blame on the mayors. Which, in working with the recyclers, they really have a good rapport with them. The recyclers are actually giving me the information that I have requested. There's still a lot that is still, you know, questionable. But the point that, I mean, the fact that they're actually trying to work with us, you know, I'm very grateful for that. But even though I resolve all those 600K from what I'm working with, there's still 684K that they have not provided documentation for. And so we're kind of at an impasse, and Walter's trying to work with the front office to see how we can move forward on that. But that's where we're at.
Is that 1 year? One fiscal year?
Two.
Yeah,
that's
2019.
Two
fiscal years?
Right. Because it rolled over when we initially gave the $2.2 million, they spent only a couple hundred thousand in year one. So last fiscal year was year two. So legislature let it roll for year two. So we're trying to rectify year two. Because most of the expenses were done during the dengue response. Right.
And so, then if I'm not mistaken, I spoke with Connie. And part of the problem is that even though the mayor's council has said they've submitted POs to be processed down at DOA, that the monies are still in our accounts. Right. So that money still reflects that that PO hasn't been processed and paid to the vendors, even though he's saying, look, I've spent everything, I've only got probably $10,000 according to my accounting, according to MCOG's accounting, but in our accounts there's over half a million dollars.
Still showing in our account as an outstanding covenants.
Yes.
Right. But even with that, the biggest issue is what Sabrina was talking about, that the invoices don't match up with the work orders at this point. So what Downtown Adaloop has done is they've assigned someone to work with the mayor's council and work with us to try to rectify the mayor's council's invoices and numbers.
And these are, I know that I was listening to the news, it's like specific mayors that are, there's some mayors who've been very compliant and then others.
So I'm going to have to say, I got to stop it there because they keep talking about the mayors. The agreement that was signed was between me and the mayor's council. And the governor and Madam Governor and the AG both endorsed it. So it's really, theoretically, it's the mayor's council. Now, if they want to throw people... Yes, that's their call. Our agreement is with the mayor's council of Guam. And that's where I signed the dotted line. Angel signed the dotted line. And he, I know it's on tape, but if he doesn't want to stand up and say, that's what I signed, he is responsible just as much as we are, as I am. So our names are on it. Whether he likes it or not, that's the truth be told. So,
why don't you just get declarations and the penalty of perjury from the contractors, you know, for their bill that I certified under penalty of perjury that I performed these services, these are a valid bill. And, you know, you check them off one by one, and
We could try.
I mean, that may be an option. Yeah.
Yes, that might be.
We actually did bring that up, going forward, that's what we'd like to put down on the invoices, because they do certify this as true.
Yeah, well.
Michelle was suggesting, no, we need stronger language.
Yeah, but ultimately, if the POs, even if the POs go up to DOA and DOA sees that there's a problem with the, you know, the supporting documents or just, you know, when the PO was filed, if it's already expired, whatever the case may be, if they haven't processed the PO, then the PO is it's useless, because it means that the money is still in our accounts and the vendor hasn't gotten paid.
Well,
whether they did the...
I mean, I'm sure you could find a lot of... The paperwork is probably terrible. Let's start with that. But if the contractors did the work and the work was done, need some process to resolve how to get, you know, the folks paid and break the impasse.
Yeah, the vendor should be screaming if they're not getting paid. They should be
They have talked to me, and, you know, they said that. But also the thing is, in the processing of, our concern is that they give the invoices to the mayor's console, and then the mayor's console signs off and sends it to DOA, which in the MOU, it's actually supposed to come to us. Mm-hmm. And DOA goes processes the invoices, because the information they're looking for, you know, they just want to say, okay, yeah, this invoice matches this PO, but we're going deeper. You know, we want more detailed information. So the DOA is not aware of that. So I personally believe that they try to funnel everything to DOA, and then they say, hey, wait a minute, you know, why are you giving, you know, you're giving this after the fact that it was paid, so we can't challenge it.
Yeah.
Which we haven't actually gone to DOA, but I have suggested that we might want to do that. But we're just trying to find every avenue to try to work with them, and that's what we want to do. We want to continue the program forward. Right. We just need the mayor's console to comply.
Right. And again, we have the money. The money is in the coffers. I by that agreement that we signed off, we have to certify that the funds were used appropriately. And I took the front office, and finally, because the meeting had last week, the light bulbs went on, so to speak, and they're like, okay, we understand the situation. It's not WAMEP's fault, because it's not ours. Because the agreement was signed, I want to rectify and make sure the agreement is upheld before we pass any more funds to the mayor's council.
And I think the newspaper article that came out yesterday with Nick clarifying what, you know, the problem process, I think that, you know, sheds some light into it. And I do want you to know, Nick, at 4 o'clock yesterday afternoon, I had one of the vendors call me and say, oh, Sabrina, I just emailed you, so...
It
worked.
Even though there's a certain mayor that Michelle heard on the radio that still says they're waiting for us, it's more people are understanding outside of our realm, because, you know, we've explained to you numerous times the process and what we're going through. Again, Adeloupe was very responsive after the meeting last week, and I think we're on track now. And again, they're bringing in an ASO to help the ASO that's at Mayor's Council already. So they're bringing in additional help for the Mayor's Council so that they can hopefully rectify what we need to be able to say, all right, we're good.
And that's under the old R, old
RF? There is no old R. It's the current
one?
RF.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
But the one, it's not fully approved yet, right? It's still under legislation.
It's approved.
Oh, okay.
Yes, it's approved. And we have two out of the eight initiatives under regs that are approved.
Okay.
So we have everything in line. There's the others that the senator might be moving forward on soon. But we have the statutes and the regs in place already. Correct. And so the only other regulation that we could spend money on, or initiative under regulation, besides the Mayor's Council, is the
stimulus
initiative. You know, we're, you know,
which we did bring that, we're
yes.
kind of keep that around.
Yes, and we hope to be implementing it soon.
We want to move something forward.
Yes. Because, you know, we have the money in the account, and the money's not for us.
The stimulus is what exactly?
I'm sorry?
The stimulus?
Okay.
The stimulus is we pay the recyclers directly when they ship out the recyclables. Here, this program that we're doing with the mayor's console is they're actually sending people to go out and collect.
Right.
Okay, and then they send it to the recyclers. So when they're paying all those, then they also pay the recyclers to accept
Right.
So everybody's, I mean, they're still generating some kind of income. Here, it's only when the recyclers ship it out that we pay.
And we're using the sliding scale based on the market.
Yeah, well,
so, you know, something like aluminum cans, which I guess I'm assuming, because everybody takes it, right? They're making money, or at least coming close, right? Mm-hmm. And there's others that lose a lot of money. And so they sit on Guam. So the idea of the initiative is we don't want this stream to be sitting on Guam. So if it takes us spending some money so that they can ship it off and at least break even or make a little bit, based on the sliding scale that our contractor put together, then that's what we'll do. Because we don't want things sitting here. If we don't have the industry to take care of it here, then let's move it to where the industry can take care of it. Yes.
In the past, we were paying $30 a ton, and so that's what Walter's saying, that we're going to use the sliding scale that the contractors have, you know, come up with, and based on the world market rates. And then if we bring that up to the board, and mm-hmm. you guys approve it,
right.
We get to that point.
Yeah, everything in the RRF is we internally make a decision, and then we present it to the board, and you guys vote on it if to move on or not.
Yeah,
that's the way we wrote the reg. So, again, like Bob was saying, you guys have a lot of authority and power that maybe a lot of people don't realize. As a policy board for Guam EPA, you can dictate how we manage. Yes, you guys are all my boss. Whether you like it or not.
It sounds like
on my car.
Out of, you know, if there's $100 in the fund for a given period, then there's some decision that needs to be made. Or what, you know, between stimulus, between, you know, shipping mm-hmm. what's already at the recyclers off Guam versus collecting it and getting it to the recyclers. There's some sort of, and that may differ year to year or.
Yeah. So how often do we revisit the sliding scale? Every year? Is that what we're looking at?
Off the top, I want
to
say every 2 years.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's something that we may need to amend because I know this market is so volatile, especially right now.
Yeah.
Because the 30 problematic waste is not just to give stimulus money just for the sake of giving stimulus money.
Yeah.
So it's for waste streams that are problematic.
Without the stimulus, they would just stay here and there'd be no resolution to that.
Initially, the $30 they were given there, it was being given across the board. That's
everything.
The way Senator Respecio wrote the law, that everybody got $30, even if you're making a ton of money on what you were sending out, or if you were losing $100.
Okay.
You still got
$30. So that's why the sliding scale
is the
easiest, most profitable one. But I guess when it comes to the distribution of funds that we're talking about right now with the impasse and the 684 that is undistributed, that's not related to the stimulus, but it's all coming from the same pool of funds,
correct.
Right?
That's correct.
So is it like a first-come, first-serve?
No.
So now that we have the regs in place, so we have to propose to you how to spend the money.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
And so there's no proposal yet because the main idea was to give it back, get money to the mayor's council, but we haven't rectified it, so we can't propose.
So that's first priority.
Yes.
So there's not even another priority yet.
Well, right now it's the stimulus, so that's where I'm saying maybe by next month.
Okay.
Next month we might have a proposal for you.
But
the revenue or the balance is $2.8 million right now?
No, it's in your financial.
Yeah.
It's about 2.1, if I'm not mistaken. It's on your financial report, the second page.
Oh, it's revenue from the RRF minus
the
available balance
is like 2.1. Mm-hmm. That's taking into account the salary for the personnel and then the $400,000 for the zero waste and the.
So per statute, there's money already assigned. So it's not like it's not in touch.
Yeah, what probably happened, Nick, is that the administrator would put a bucket of money into each of the areas that he prioritizes. You know, if he's got $2 million, he could put $500 here, $500 there, $500 there, and then create the rule underneath it as to how that's to be paid or distributed.
And what has been discussed internally is, like, you know, we don't have to put all $2 million down when we to present it to you. I would like to think that we could do a $400,000 clip here, like just for just as an example. The mayor's council is finally cleared, and we can provide them money. We'll give them $400,000, and when they exhaust that, then we can come back to you guys and say, look, or when they're almost exhausted that money, then we can say, look, they're actually using this. We're good with their invoices. They're at about $250,000 or $300,000. We'd like to procure or get your approval to give them another, some more money from the fund.
So you anticipate it'll be kind of like an emerging management, you know, it'll be ongoing management of what the priorities are as, you know, it's not like
it's a year.
Set it.
It doesn't have to always begin at the beginning of the fiscal year. And to be honest with the issues that we've had with the Mayor's Council, that's the way I would prefer to see it, instead of giving him $1 million right up front and say,
have fun.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't want to say it that way, but yes.
It sounds like this is the first like major disbursement of this magnitude of funds under this program, and it's really about setting the proper precedent because this is a lot of money, and you know, although this is painful, the next time around, all the lessons learned should make it easier
hopefully,
for all involved.
That's what we're hoping.
Is there steps being taken to make sure we don't run into this next time?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
a ledger.
We're actually in the past we've always given them like $400,000, $500,000, and truthfully they've never even exhausted all those funds. We've had to take some money back, but as Walter said, the 2 years ago the legislature gave them $2.2 million, and then now this last fiscal year it was $1.3 million, and they actually didn't actually give out POs until June of 2019. And they've exhausted all the funds in September. So I was a little bit concerned that you spent $1.3 million in 5 months when you couldn't spend $400,000 in the past in 9 months. So anyway, but we're really trying to work with them and, you know, reconcile all the paperwork so we can move forward.
Yeah. Again, we can't move forward. We broke the law, so the administrator or the deputy administrator is not the sole signatory. We wrote it, and yes, I was part of it, so I agree with it, that it has, after we make a decision, we'll present it to the board, and the board will either agree or disagree with our decision. It shouldn't be just one person managing this thing, or one agency, so this is our ways of checks and balances.
Last question on this issue. So, like, this has been kind of going on for, a
long time.
Yeah, and at what point do you just kind of, would you call it? Would your recommendation be, this documentation is not in order, and we don't think that this amount of money is legitimate?
That's a good question. I'm wondering that myself. And I've asked guidance both from Mataloup and just around to say, when is enough enough? And besides, how can we get around holding the island hostage because the Mayor's Council is not meeting their requirements? I mean, we're even looking at, do we need to do a MOU of each mayor? And that way we get away from the Mayor's Council. I mean, I'm getting that desperate. Because I know we're holding the island hostage because of this.
At some point, the villagers are going to get fed up, right?
They're already fed up, and I don't blame them.
Say the governor would just have to make the call. She'll take the heat.
She could tell me how to do things, and I'm good. I'm great.
Maybe,
but that's where we're at right now.
I don't
have an answer for you. I'm
maybe
sorry.
Head's got a role at the mayor's council.
Who stands to suffer if you say, last $300K is just it's not legitimate.
I'm not an attorney, but I think it's the person that signed their name on the line. But I don't know. I don't know if you want to provide any input because they're not ready, but that's who I would
like,
think.
Is it the service provider that is waiting for payment ultimately that is...
They get their payments.
Suffer,
it's the suffering is that, you know...
I think both parties are going to suffer.